Let's get back to Consult Us on Business on TalkZone.com. Here's your host, Frank Bisconti.
Welcome back to the show. Our guest today is the current head of school for Elgin Academy, one of the top private, primary, and secondary schools in America. Our guest experiences include being headmaster of Wichita Collegiate School in Kansas, the dean for academic affairs at Bridgewater College in Virginia, president of the James Madison Institute for Public Policy Studies, a Florida-based think tank, and research fellow in two Washington, D.C. think tanks, the Ethics and Public Policy Center and the American Enterprise Institute. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. John W. Cooper. John, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Frank.
It's great to have you here with us.
Thanks. Good to be here.
How about just giving us a little bit of background on Elgin Academy? Tell us something about the school.
I'd be delighted. Hey, thanks so much. Elgin Academy is located in Elgin, Illinois, about 35 miles west of downtown Chicago, so part of the greater metropolitan Chicago area, which boasts several outstanding independent schools, and Elgin Academy is one of those. So it's a private independent school with students from 3 years of age, preschool, all the way up through 18 years of age, the high school. It's a college prep program. There are 460 kids overall in the school. That gives about 35 kids in a graduating class. 100% of those kids go on to college. Last year's graduating class made about $3 million in merit scholarship offers from a lot of very selective schools and colleges. Outstanding faculty, a full range of activities in the classroom and out, as strong in the English and the humanities and history area as in the science and math area, an outstanding fine arts program, and just a great learning community, a wonderful community where parents are really involved as volunteers. Kids have a great attitude and are good influences on one another.
Those are some amazing statistics that you just threw at us here. By comparison, when I look at some of the high school graduation and on to college statistics for public schools in the Chicago area, they are numbers more like high school graduation rates of 20-25%. In your opinion, what do you think are the greatest differences between public and private schools here in the U.S.?
Well, actually, Frank, the business model is very different between public and private. Let me just give you a few statistics to sort of hang your hat on here. An independent school like Elgin Academy does charge significant tuition. It's about $20,000 a year per student in the upper school, and then for the younger kids, it steps down a little bit from that. But that would compare to a public school expenditure of about $12,000 to $14,000 nationwide. So a significant difference there, but not real significant, especially given the fact that the average class size in a school like Elgin Academy is about 15, and the average class size in the public schools is about 30. So what does that tell us? That tells us it's a lot lower efficiency rating in the way the business operates in the public sector. And I'll give you just one statistic that'll reveal this dramatically. If you look at the private sector, and this includes not only an Elgin Academy, but all the Catholic schools, all the Jewish schools, the Muslim schools, etc. If you ask the question, how much of the payroll expense is devoted to the staff members who deliver the service at the front lines, that is the teachers, the counselors, the librarians, kids who work primarily directly with students rather than in a support role. In the private sector, that number is about 82%. So about 82% of payroll is devoted to frontline delivery services. In the public sector, that number is 52%. There's a 30-point swing between the dollars that are invested in frontline delivery. So right away, that's a huge hurdle from a business model point of view for the public sector to overcome. Now, the second thing about excellence is private schools don't try to be all things to all people. Some private schools emphasize back to the basics, and some are military schools, and some are academic excellence schools like ours. People choose private schools. They want to be there, so they've got skin in the game. not only the money, but the choice of the school and the thinking about what school best fits my kid. That is not the model of the public enterprise, which is primarily still geographically oriented. So if you're in a public school, the chances are, it's not entirely true with charter schools and magnet schools, but chances are you're going to your local school determined by where you live geographically. So you got less choice. You got less skin in the game. You got less commitment. The other thing about the academically excellent schools, of course, is we have some admissions testing. So obviously our kids are going to do significantly better, but private schools of all types, even if they don't test kids from an academic point of view, tend to have much better discipline, much better performance than their public school counterparts. So it's a classic example of the difference between a government monopoly and a free enterprise operation.
And how do the educational results really differ between public and private schools?
Well, you see it cumulatively, and I've been doing this a long time, so I've seen it, not only in the research but anecdotally throughout my career. Kids are responding to the kind of education that's offered at a place like Elgin Academy. They're going to grow more this year. They're going to build on that foundation and grow more next year. They're going to build on that foundation and grow more next year. You know, by the time they're seniors, they've in a school like ours, they've done a lot of college-level work. They've taken a lot of AP classes, advanced placement classes, got a lot of college credits. They're poised. They had a lot of experience in public speaking. Because they're in small classes of 10 or 12 or 15, they've had to interact. They've had to lead the class. They've had to learn how to talk to adults. They're just way, way ahead of the game versus their public school counterparts. And from a curricular point of view, if you look at the material that's covered, the textbooks, the books that are used, that sort of thing, typically in a school like ours, the kids are working at about 2 years ahead of their public school counterparts. Now, I say all of that. I'm not here to denigrate public schools. There are a lot of great people working hard in public schools, a lot of great teachers, a lot of great ideas there. But the fact of the matter is the problems with the public schools are not about the people. They're about the systems. They're about the incentives. They're about the structure. And again, to me, it traces all the way back to the issue of whether it's a monopoly where the providers are in charge and the consumers have little choice and little say, little power, and versus the market model where the consumer is going to make choices, not necessarily always educated choices, but always constantly self-correcting. That's the beauty of the market mechanism.
Is there any value at all in discussing the privatization of the public school system?
Oh, absolutely. And the way I would approach this, I'm pretty much an incrementalist. I do a lot of thinking about political policy. But the way I would approach this is I would do it just like we've done the colleges. Starting after World War II with the GI Bill, the United States Congress created portable scholarships. We can call them vouchers because that's the same thing. The point of the matter is people qualified either because they were veterans or for some other reason they qualified for a scholarship, which they could take to any school in the country, public or private. It's still that way. Subsequently, we have had things like Pell Grants, et cetera, which are also portable scholarships or vouchers. When you create that system, you create market mechanisms both in the private sector and in the public sector. Important thing to note about Pell Grants and GI Bill grants is the amount of private schools or the percentage of the industry dominated by private versus public since World War II has actually gone down. There are fewer students in private colleges relative to public colleges today than there were in 1945. So it's not the fact that public institutions got replaced by private institutions. It's the fact that market mechanisms replaced monopoly mechanisms. And so you have 3,500 colleges and schools across the country today vigorously competing for those students who have portable scholarships or portable vouchers. And the private schools and the public schools all act in entrepreneurial way. They don't act in a monopoly way. So the key definition here is not whether it's a private or a public institution. I've been to both. The question is whether the structure, the relationship between the consumer and the producer, is on a market mechanism.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And being a market guy myself, you know, I completely understand that. And, I guess the same would be true with any monopoly in the United States. Forget that it's in the public sector. But the government is very wary about any company that is developing a monopoly. So break up the monopoly, create competition, and you'll eventually just produce a better product.
Yeah, in fact, I think of monopolies in a different way even than that, Frank. Markets don't naturally tolerate monopolies. Monopolies only exist really where government coercive power backs them up. So it's not a matter of saying, well, let's get government to break up the monopolies and to ensure competition. It's let's stop government from changing the rules of the game in the marketplace and creating monopolies by favoring one player over another. So, classical liberal economics will tell you you can't have a monopoly without government coercion. So get the government out of that business. Sometimes it's pretty overt, the way government creates monopolies. Sometimes it's fairly subtle. Basically, if you think of the government role in regulation, if the government is acting like an impartial referee at a football game, not determining the outcome, who wins and loses, then you've got a reasonable regulatory regime. If the referee is starting to penalize the successful, and favor the unsuccessful, or for whatever reason favor one side over another, then it has started to muck around with the market mechanism, if you will, and pick winners and losers and create monopolies and use the power, the coercive power of government, to not only create but to maintain those monopolies.
Okay, now that you and I have completely determined that privatization of public schools would be a good thing, what would the government, any government, state or federal government, incentive really be to even want to look at that option?
Well, it could be a huge money saver for the taxpayer. If you assume, for example, that some or all of these dollars for portable scholarships are still going to come from the taxpayer, the efficiency gains from market structures versus monopoly structures are dramatic. Secondly, however, insofar as education is a public good, that is, it's something that increases the commonwealth, traditionally the authors of the Constitution would have put it that way, just like building infrastructure, roads and bridges helps to grow the economy, insofar as an educated workforce does the same thing, I would argue even in spades, then there's a huge benefit to be had and a huge incentive for government to say, let's have the best education system possible. But it takes rethinking, particularly on the economic level, about the difference between monopolies and markets. And again, I don't even necessarily say the word privatization, because we haven't seen privatization in the colleges. Again, we've seen the opposite of that, at least in terms of whether you ask, you know, when you ask whether colleges are public institutions or private institutions, but we have seen the marketization, if I can coin that term, and the demonopolization of higher education, and that's the model we need to follow for K-12 education.
John, great points. I'm going to ask you to stick with us for just a second. We do have to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. Cooper about the impact of education on the development of successful entrepreneurs in America. We'll be right back on TalkZone.